Good morning. The topic we'd like to take time with this morning is a topic I've never heard discussed before. And in my opinion, it needs to be discussed a lot more often because of our great need. And I've entitled the presentation, "The Physiology of Dress Reform." A lot of people read about dress reform. A lot of people reject dress reform. But a lot of people don't understand the laws of the body that are actually sound. And I think with proper understanding of how the body functions, you may be much more inclined to reconsider or reevaluate your position on it. To begin with, I'd like you to turn with me in your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 31. And many of you recognize this chapter as the chapter on the virtuous woman. I'd like to direct your attention to verse 21 of Proverbs 31. And it says this: "She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for her household are clothed with scarlet." And I'd like you to look in your margin with me, if you have a number there, and see what that word scarlet really means, because we're not talking about just color here. And it says, in my margin, probably does in yours also, it says double garments. One of the attributes of a virtuous woman is properly clothing her family. Not only buying, selling land, and all these other things you read about in here, which would be quite an adjustment for me if my wife was in charge of buying and selling our property. But it also talks about the virtuous woman, and it says she is not afraid of the outside, or if you want to call it the environment around her family, because she's well prepared. I found that text quite interesting, and I think that's a good orientation to what we're going to spend our time on this morning. Now, the process of physiology is really looking at how does dress reform affect the physical functioning of our bodies. We're not going to talk about modesty this morning, even though that's critical. We're not going to talk about colors, even though that's important. We're not going to talk about patterns and shades and lengths of dress this morning. We're going to stick with physiology because there are so many different opinions about the parts I just described that I'm not here to address those. Because the physiology behind this is so sound that I think it's going to startle you. And you know what I do with my patients who aren't even Adventist? I have to tell them how to get dressed so they don't have to come back and see me so often. And that's shocking. And guess what? They don't take it as an embarrassment or an affront on them personally. They're grateful. Because you see, I haven't bound it up with religious traditions. And they see it as a law of the being and are willing to follow it. And I hope that we can make that step this morning. I'd like to take a look at our first overhead, which orients our thinking. And if you can't see these, I would like to recommend you get yourself in a position where you can, because we're using the screen a fair amount. From Councils on Health, we have, "It is impossible to have health when the extremities..." Now, what is the extremities? The things that are distant from us. Hands, arms, feet, legs, are habitually cold. For if there is too little blood in them, there will be too much in other portions of the body. In other words, we're shifting, or what we call shunting of the blood from one area of the body to the other. But here's what I've underlined, and obviously you can see that. It says perfect health. And we've tried to define perfect health. We tried in my studies, we tried to just define what is the optimum diet, we've tried a lot of things, but here's a valid statement. Perfect health requires a perfect circulation. I hope some of you folks want perfect health this morning. Because we're going to look at perfect circulation, because that's how we attain it. But this cannot be had while 3 to 4 times as much clothing is worn upon the body, where the vital organs are situated, as upon the feet and limbs. What I want us to conclude from this is Our basic underlying goal this morning is to understand how to improve circulation. How do we get that life current? How do we get blood to those parts of the body to nourish them, to keep them functional, to keep them not stiff like arthritis, to keep them from not causing us to have to go around and be on heart medications because we're not dressed properly? Makes a big difference. Proper circulation equals, I should say, perfect circulation equals perfect health. So our real goal is maintaining our proper blood flow. I'd like to go ahead and take a look at a short description of our anatomy. I'm sure that many of you are familiar with this, but maybe a few insights can be helpful to you. The first is when we take a look at arteries. Arteries are the vessels that take blood from the heart. They carry the warmest blood to your all parts of your body, including your extremities. They tend to be high-pressure vessels, meaning that they have to contain more pressure, and they're actually built different. They also have a muscle in the wall that can open and close to allow blood flow. And they can also cause a shunting effect, meaning that one vessel can shut off and let the other place get the blood for a while, and then they can go back and forth and alternate. They also tend to run deep in the tissue. In other words, if you've ever had the unfortunate test of having an arterial stick, they don't draw it up here like you get your blood drawn. They go right here at your wrist, and they don't put the needle in at an angle either, do they? They put it straight in. And when they see that old plunger starting to jump a little bit, they know they've hit an artery. And if you've cut yourself seriously and you see it squirting out, you know you've got an artery and not a vein there. When I mean squirting, I mean under pressure. On the other hand, we have veins. These are the vessels that return blood to the heart. They are low pressure, and they tend to run surface. So when you look at your arm or you put a tourniquet on your arm or a blood pressure cuff, you tend to see these vessels start to bulge. And of course, they do that when you have your blood drawn. Those are veins, and they run on the surface. They tend to surround tissue, like the arm, and they tend to maintain a heat barrier so that the arteries don't, quote, constrict interior-wise. Another important part of our anatomy is that you basically have one artery for every two veins. You've got one going out for every two coming back. And as we look at this, we're dealing with a low-pressure system which isn't moving as much volume through there. So in the extremities, when you find large vessels, you should expect one of two things. Or at least, you should expect either increased function, meaning a muscle can lift weights because of the blood flow that's going through it, or you should be able to expect increased warmth that's needed. In the extremities, that's both true. As you can see from our slide here, it says the limbs and feet have large veins to receive large amounts of blood and warmth, nutrition, and elasticity. Why do we lose our elasticity? Why do we get more stiff as we get older? Why do those joints kind of act up on us? And strength may be imparted to them. But when the blood is chilled from these extremities, their blood vessels contract, which makes the circulation of the necessary amount of blood to them still more difficult. A good circulation preserves the blood pure and secures health. A bad circulation leaves the blood to become impure and induces congestion of the brain, the lungs, and diseases of the head, heart, liver, and lungs. That's my department. Diseases of the heart, liver, lungs. Amazing. So amazing that people have difficulty understanding it. When we have cold extremities, that means the body has been defeated. When your extremity is cold, that means the body isn't capable of keeping it warm anymore. It's not just a matter of being cold. It's a matter of the body has done everything it can to keep you warm, and it's been beat. And some people say, well, I can touch my arm, and it feels nice and warm. And I'm saying, I'm thankful. Your body is still ahead of the battle. Because by the time it gets cold, you've lost the battle. A lot of people don't realize that. Now, let's take a look at how God works, and let's take a look at what our part is. But before we do that, I want to look at a few more quotes. Once again, back to our anatomy lesson, the vessels of our arms and legs are arranged for protection. Once again, the way God designs us is we tend to run our arteries in places that are protected. You notice your major arteries don't run right here close to your elbow. They run on the inside of your arm. You notice that your arteries don't run over your kneecap. They run on the back of your leg. Well, why did God do this? He knew we were going to bump ourselves up a fair amount. So God has handled the anatomy properly. Takes care of our vessels. Says our Creator has formed the limbs with large vessels, contain large portions of blood, that the limbs may be sufficiently nourished, proportionately warm, with the other portions of the body. But fashion robs the limbs of coverings, and the life current is chilled from its natural channel and thrown back upon the internal organs. How'd you like to read that in Review and Herald? Only this is Health Reformer, January 1, 1877. And by the way, if you go back and look at the styles at that day, you would find people dressed significantly different than we are today. But what about this? God has done His part. The question is, are you willing to do your part? God has made the vessels large. He's protected them from trauma. But what is our part in this situation? How do we maintain proper circulation? You know what our part is? Clothing. That's how we do our part. God can't do any more for you than what He's already done with your anatomy. Now it's up to us to deal with that. So when we try to control the temperature of the body, we've got the vessels there. They are large enough to do that. So like I say, it's up to us now. So proper temperature control is through proper clothing. Well, how do we clothe our bodies to maintain this proper circulation? I have a quotation here from Child Guidance 426. Special attention should be given to the extremities, that they may be as thoroughly clothed as the chest and the region over the heart, where the greatest amount of heat. So the extremities are the low temperature areas. The trunk tends to be the high temperature area. So how do we equalize the circulation between the two? Another quotation from Christian Temperance and Bible Hygiene. This is a book that some of you may not be familiar with. This is a combined book. The first portion is written by Ellen G. White. The second portion written by James White. It is not on a compilation. It's a book that they have written. This comes from the first portion that Ellen White wrote. It says, the limbs, which should have even more covering than the other portions of the body, because furthest from the center of circulation. So we've got heat in the middle, furthest from the circulation. We are often not suitably protected. While over the vital organs, there is naturally more warmth than other portions of the body. There is undue portion of covering. The fashionable attire is one of the greatest causes of disease among women. Perfect health, there's that statement, depends upon perfect circulation. But how do we deal with that? How do we equalize the circulation? True dress reform regulates every article of dress worn upon the person. Now, men, this doesn't say worn upon the ladies. It says worn upon every person. That means you and me. In order to equalize the circulation of the blood, the clothing should be equally distributed. Now, what does it mean to be equally distributed upon the person, that equal warmth may be preserved in all parts of the body? If I give you an equal portion, don't you want the same thing as I've got? Or you wouldn't think I was being very equal. Well, what does your arm think of your leg, and what does your arm think of your chest? That's the real question we've got to deal with here. And so to get equalized distribution throughout the body, to have equalized circulation, reason with me for a minute here. Proper temperature regulation is accomplished by clothing the extremities. No doubt about that. We feel hot. Now listen to this. This is important to understand. We feel hot because our core temperature rises. Now, when we say core temperature, we're talking about temperature of the internal organs, the core, the center, like an apple. The core temperature rises when we... The core temperature is hot because the core temperature rises when we have poor circulation of the extremities. If you want to cool off, put some clothes on. Doesn't that sound just about anti as you can possibly get? That's what physiology is saying to you. If you and I were trying to defy the law of gravity, like right now we're defying the laws of health, we'd all be dead because we'd be up trying to jump off this building and expect to float. But yet we will not study the laws of the body and put into place what we find. But this is what the laws of the body say. To have equal circulation, we have to have equal covering. Otherwise, it's going to be chilled in its process of getting the blood flow through. Let's go on. So on a hot day, how would you so adapt your clothing to equalize your temperatures and maintain yourself as cool as possible? I'd like to recommend to you the Arabs. How does the Arabs keep themselves as cool as possible on a 130-degree desert? They don't wear bikinis, do they? What do they wear? A light garment, usually light in color, and they wear full covering, sometimes even probably over their face in a sandstorm. The point I'm trying to get at is that the places in the world that are warm put clothes on for the sake of protection and for sake of equalized circulation. And if it's really warmed, they can perspire into those garments and they won't become so dehydrated. We'll address that a little more later. So let's continue to reason here from cause to effect. We find that most people, reasoning from cause to effect, you would do the opposite that most people do. They clothe the trunk, the abdomen and chest, and leave the extremities naked when they want to cool off. However, if you would follow the laws of the body, you would clothe the extremities and leave the trunk naked. Now that obviously is not proper, so we're not going to do that. But stay with me with the logic here. The concept is we want to get heat to equalize throughout the body. I told you I wasn't going to talk about modesty this morning, but we're not going to get out of hand. The point is that to equalize circulation, we have to dress the extremities like you dress the trunk. Critical. And after we talk about the results of not doing this, I think you'll see it more significant. And then I said, of course, this is not modest nor proper. So the next best thing is light clothing on the trunk as well as the extremities. To equalize circulation in the extremities, we must cover summer or winter. As the outside temperature changes, colder or hotter, you need to adjust the type and quantity of clothing worn. It's more clothing in the winter, obviously, of different type of clothing, so you have more insulation so that your blood doesn't lose its temperature so rapidly and throwing an extra load on the heart. Let's go ahead and start with our shoes. We'll start at the bottom and work our way up. We'll talk about the limbs and the arms already. How about the shoes? When your feet get cold in the wintertime, it's because the blood can't get down there and warm that tissue and get back to the heart and its travel without carrying enough heat with it. And like I said, by the time the extremity gets cold, the body has lost the battle. Some of you do some work in hydrotherapy. Dress reform and hydrotherapy is the basic same concepts because we're dealing with the physiology of the body. When you want to warm a limb in hydrotherapy, or if you want to heal a wound on the leg or gangrenous toe, what do? Use hot and cold water. You know it. 3 minutes hot, 30 seconds cold. 3 minutes hot, 30 seconds cold. Why do you do that? Well, the hot tends to bring blood to that area, engorges the tissue, and then is stagnant. It won't go anywhere. is trying to dissipate the heat, and it hasn't done its job. And so the vessels open up, and they just kind of just lay there lethargic. And so what do? To get the lethargy out of that foot? You stick it in about 50-degree water, and you know what happens. The vessels constrict rapidly. They try to compensate for that cold, and that, quote, stale blood that had the toxins in now is carried out of the system, and you go back and forth. So we actually are having what we call a pumping reaction by your hot and cold foot treatment. Exactly the same concept we're dealing with here in clothing. If we want to maintain that limb at proper temperature, and we want to pull heat away from the internal organ, we warm the limbs, and that'll pull heat right out to there. It'll pull your blood circulation right out. What do you do when you have a headache? You put the feet in cold water or hot water. You put it in hot, and what do you put on your head? Well, why do you do that? Because you want to pull blood away from the congestion in your mind, because you just worked 8 hours on the books and behind the computer, and you've had it. And so you pull the blood away from the mind by doing that. The same thing we can do with our clothing. Back to our shoes. I'd like to read you some data from the American Orthopedic Foot and Ankle Society. And of course, the title of the articles is If the Shoe Fits. It says, for women, that's a big if. Not surprising, women wearing too small shoes are the most prone to painful deformities such as bunions, hammertoes, which are remarkably common among women. One orthopedic surgeon recently reported that of 800 patients who underwent surgery for bunions, 800 patients, surgery for bunions, 94% were women. 6% were men. Surgeries for hammertoe, out of 850 surgeries for hammertoe, 80% were women. And it goes on to say here that studies on barefoot populations have shown no female predisposition to these problems. So it's not female versus male here. What it really is footwear. And I'm going to draw something to try to demonstrate this. And this is going to be strictly a demonstration. And I want to show you something. We have different shapes of shoes. We have some shoes that are shaped something like this. We have some shoes that are shaped more round-toed. And I've got, for men, you've got your significant work boots, which are just good and round, even steel toe in. Now, what kind of a foot do you think would fit in this kind of a shoe? Would you like to design it for me? Let me design one for you. You'd have small toes on the sides. Your big toe would be in the middle. And then you have small toes. Now, some of you, it doesn't take too much anatomy to realize that God didn't make your foot that way. Wouldn't that be a proper design, the shoes that I see people wearing? Also, that would allow that foot to be more cramped because you can put it down a funnel. It would allow it to have less blood circulation, and you'd have to have it properly padded to maintain the temperature of it. On the other hand, I don't need to draw the foot that'd fit in the other shoe, but that'd be much more likely to fit the anatomy that you have. The problem is we're not reasoning from cause to effect. You know what our problem is? We're buying shoes because we like them, not because they're good for us. And any woman that puts up with fashion for my sake, I'll take my wife for example. If my wife put up for fashions for my sake, I feel that I'd be the one having the problem. I have women come to me and they say, I would dress properly if. And the if isn't on them. They say, if my husband wouldn't do that. Well, husbands, we need to get out of the way. We blame the vanity on the ladies, but I'm not sure where the biggest vanity area is. You should not be ashamed to walk next to your wife who's dressed properly. If you are, I expect you to search your own heart. My wife and I started out early in our college experience, and I had one friend that came to me. And he says, why would you ever go out with someone like that dresses like she does? You know, I thought in my mind, that's the reason I'm going with her. So men, please get it out of your way. You may need to spend some time on your knees so you're not worried about some cosmetic appearance or fashion that's around. And young people, when you're looking for a mate, make sure they like you the way you are instead of waiting to try to change you. Unless you need some changing, don't misunderstand me. But our foot, talk about disease, talk about hematomas, talk about pain. Look at your shoes. Do they fit your anatomy? The article says that most people wear shoes too small. It goes on to talk about it's hard to fit shoes to women's feet. The ball, the front part of the foot, of most women's feet is wider and the heel narrower than the standard shoes. The average woman's foot is 3.66 inches wide at the broadest point, according to one of the society, AOFAS society surveys. And the widths in shoes range from 3 to 4.5. The widths ranging of the foot from 3 to 4.5 inches, obviously depending on the person. But women's shoes are typically only 3 inches wide. That is narrower than the narrowest foot. After you've measured your foot, goes on to talk about what to do and measure both feet and et cetera, et cetera. We're not going to go into that. The point is that your shoes must fit your anatomy just like your clothing does. So next time you go to the store, please look at your foot and look at the shoe and see if they match up. The other thing about shoes that I want to spend some time on while we're dealing with the physiology and function of the body, and that is, what do heels do to your anatomy? Okay? What do heels do to your anatomy? Well, if you look at your heels and you stand like this. Now watch what happens to my posture. As I slowly raise myself on my heels, what do you see me doing? I'm moving towards that pulpit. I don't know if you notice this. I'm increasing my lower back curvature, okay? And in plain English, my buttocks is sticking out and it's protruding my chest. Now you know what the style is for, don't you? Do you understand what I'm saying? The styles of raising the heel is to accentuate those parts of the body that do not need to be accentuated. And then you try to walk on heels. Men, you might try it in your own privacy, your own home. But men, if you've ever tried to walk on high heels, you would understand what talent it takes. And don't get caught crossing the pasture when a bull is chasing you in those things. Do you see my point? They are totally impractical. And in my time in academy, they had what they called spikes. Some of you remember that. Those things put holes in the asphalt sidewalks, ladies. You could see, when you walked to the girls' dorm, you could see the imprints. And we're not talking about weighing 200 pounds. We're talking about putting 150 pounds or 120 pounds on about, what part? A quarter, an eighth, a sixteenth of a square inch? They estimated during that time you'd be better having an elephant step on your toe than one of those. Because of the weight per area. That's what I'm talking about here. Enough said about shoes. Let's go on. Another quote from Christian Temperance and Bible Hygiene. It says, the suffering caused among women by unhealthful dress cannot be estimated. Cannot be estimated. Unhealthful dress cannot be estimated. Well, how much are we talking about here? Well, how many of you have heard of PMS? How many of you heard of endometriosis? How about cancers? How about abnormal cycling? Dress plays a role to proper circulation. If you congest the abdominal and the pelvic organs, then you are also going to have problems with cycling. Why do Adventist females have so much cancer being on such good diets? It's more than just diet. We have to accept and not use multiple choice in our areas of reform. This is speaking of children here. It says their limbs as well as their arms are left almost naked. The heart, weakened by too great effort, fails in its efforts, and the limbs become habitually cold. Remember when I said the body is beat? That's a different way of saying it. And the blood, which is chilled away from the extremities, is thrown back upon the lungs, the brain, and inflammation and congestion of the lungs or the brain is the result. So we see this happening in many statements said in different ways. Do Yes. Healthful Living, page 199. Maybe I push it a little bit higher. Maybe I'm missing the bottoms here. The extremities are chilled and the heart is thrown upon double labor. The people that I work with can't afford double labor for their hearts. I don't know how many of you can. I'd recommend you not waste your energy that way, making the heart work twice as hard. The people that I deal with heart disease, they can't afford half much more labor. In fact, they're medicated to actually decrease the amount of labor for the heart, to force the blood in these chilled extremities. And when the blood has performed its circuit through the body and returned to the heart, it is not the same vigorous, warm current which left it. You see how it's supposed to happen? It's actually supposed to be able to make its full circuit and come back to the heart warm. That's what's really supposed to happen. And when it doesn't, it overworks the heart. These aren't the same quote. Very similar, though. Health Reformer, January 1, 1872. When the limbs and arms are chilled, the blood is driven from these parts to lungs and head. The circulation is unbalanced, and nature's fine machinery does not move harmoniously. The body is required to keep things at a certain temperature. Your hormones, your enzymes that function at the cell level, are required to be at a certain temperature. And we're going to take a look at the physiology as far as what research has shown. We're going through what we're dealing with here as far as what we find in the writings. And then we're going to put the scientific research behind this in our second half here. But what I'm really saying is that the fine machinery that's disturbed are things like joint capsules, the synovial fluid in your joints that make you stiff, the muscles that don't contract properly, the injuries that you have as a result of chilled limbs. Have a summary page from the writings of Ellen White, just as listing the various quotes. Obviously, we can't share them all this morning, but she lists 24 things here from various quotes as far as cold or cool or chilled extremities. What happens? Shortness of breath. What do you think of a patient that walks in my office? They say, "Doc, I'm short of breath. I haven't been able to breathe right." And I tell them to get dressed. It probably raises quite a few eyebrows. But I will tell them something. If they will dress properly, they won't put as much load on those lungs, and those lungs will be able to get good oxygen because it's got blood running through them. Headaches, nosebleeds, fullness in the chest, producing palpitation of the heart. How many people will go to the doctor and they say, "Doc, my heart feels like it's skipping," or "it feels like it's pounding out of my chest"? And guess what they'll do? They'll get a beta blocker to try to slow down the heart when what they really need to do is get dressed. Irritation and restlessness. I should have that quote. I'll just try to paraphrase it. This phrase is from children, and it talks about that most irritation and restlessness can be done away with if we properly clothe our children. So if you have a child like that, please examine to make sure they are properly clothed. Indigestion. Tegamet, Zantac, Prilosec, all the medications to try to decrease the acid in the stomach. Nerves and veins become contracted. Bad circulation, which produces disease. I realize some of these are quite general. Double labor upon the heart. Weakened heart by double labor. Inflammation, congestion of lungs, congestion of the brain. Constant cold, pale and dwarfed. One story you may have read about, some of you read through the testimonies, about one lady that asked why, it was one man, I believe, that asked why his daughter was so sickly and his sons weren't. And guess what the advice given to him was? "Why don't you dress your daughter with the same consideration as you dress your sons, and you won't have a sickly daughter with dwarfed limbs and small muscles?" How about catarrh? Congestion. Postnasal drip. How do you want to talk about that? Influenza, croup, scrofulous swellings in the neck, swellings in the neck and face, displacements, cancers, sometimes just listing terrible diseases, miscarriages, lifelong invalids, premature death. Quite a list. Now let's go to the research side of things and see if we find a consistency in what we're talking about. First, we'll look at some major organs here. We've got the stomach. These are animals or humans that have been given as their, quote, research, the cold treatment. They may have been put in cold water. They may have been put in a cold room, like a walk-in refrigerator. They may have done something to actually chill the body. I mean, this was an experimental attempt. This wasn't just someone not dressed properly. They were actually trying to check out the physiological effect of cold. Acute erosions leading to ulcers on routine in cold-stressed animals. You decrease that, you affect the stress in the animal, and that mucus lining can't hold up. I want to ask you how many of you have ulcers. Kidneys. Cold is affecting producing nephrosclerosis. Your nephron, that filtering unit in your kidney, becomes hardened, and therefore it cannot filter things out, or it cannot contain or bring back into circulation what it should. The liver, fatty infiltration of the liver, is a regular result of cold stress similar to alcohol damage. Fatty infiltration of the liver. The brain, nervous system, cold in man causes congestion, edema of the brain. Now, edema of the brain is like having a concussion. So much trauma that the area starts to swell and you usually see a loss of function or definitely a headache. If sufficiently severe or prolonged, hemorrhages, bleeding result. The spleen, cold exposure in rats caused a marked decrease in the size of the spleen, as well as in all the lymph nodes and other lymph organs. That's your immune system. Immunity to diseases. Heart, exposure to cold caused vessels to constrict, placing an increased load on the heart, as well as we already talked about palpitations or arrhythmias. How about the endocrine glands? What happens to them when we cold stress them? And the adrenal glands, that's the glands that produce adrenaline. They sit above both kidneys. It says cold causes a discharge of adrenaline. Now here's something that's a principle we need to learn. When a person is cold, it can actually be stimulating to them. When a person is cold, it can be stimulating to them, meaning that they can actually feel more stimulated and more awake when they walk out of their house in the morning and that cold air hits that limb and they actually feel better for it. Are they following proper physiology? Definitely not. Have they drunk their cup of coffee? They probably don't drink coffee. But the confusing thing to many people is they say, it doesn't bother me. I can handle it. They don't realize that an alarm reaction is going off in the body and they are producing more adrenaline and they actually like the stimulation. But in reality, they need to go and get themselves properly dressed so they don't overstimulate and actually cause a decrease in adrenal gland function. Prolonged cold causes a cholesterol content of the adrenal gland to be elevated. Sudden cold depletes adrenal steroids. That obviously means you're producing more adrenaline. Cold causes vitamin C to be lost from the adrenal glands. The effect of cold in the adrenals is equal to that or more severe than that of pain, trauma, or starvation. Those are other obvious stresses to the body. Cold is classed as an alarm stimulus along with formaldehyde injections. Please don't get these. Atropine, you want to stimulate the heart, get things going. Trauma, forced exercise. The end result of cold exposure is adrenal depletion and enlargement. I have some people that walk in my office. They tell me they're so tired, they're not sure it's worth living. They really wonder what's going on. They've got adrenal gland fatigue, if you want to call it that, or depletion. In the thyroid, another one of our endocrine glands, we have prolonged cold taxes the thyroid gland, possibly raising the BMR, basic metabolic rate. In other words, you can actually increase your, quote, energy burning potential to try to keep you warm, increasing the tissue and utilization of thyroxin, one of your thyroid hormones. In the pituitary gland, the master gland of the body, the anterior and middle pituitary lobes reduce in size, and in the testes and seminal vesicles, prolonged cold decreases the size of these organs to about half. That's the research. That's demonstrating that either in humans or in research animals. General metabolism, vitamin C, sudden cold causes a decrease in vitamin C in the content of adrenals, liver, kidneys, other tissues. Blood cholesterol, dogs exposed to cold cause a marked increase in cholesterol levels. So it's not all diet, is it? In decreasing your cholesterol. Blood sugar, a carbohydrate load causes marked hyper, that means your blood sugar goes up more rapidly after exposure to cold. However, if the adrenal gland is depleted, there will be a first marked hypo, or a decrease in blood sugar, and a later increase in your blood sugar. So it depends on how the adrenal gland is functioning. In the stomach absorption, cold exposure causes substances not ordinarily absorbed in the stomach to be readily absorbed. The mechanism is thought to be gastric erosions, that's those ulcers we talked about, which allow excess of the stomach contents in the bloodstream. In other words, you're getting foreign particles into the bloodstream and shouldn't go there because, quote, the doorways are damaged. Blood pressure. The cold pressure test is putting one extremity in cold water and observing the rise in blood pressure. And sometimes they've seen up to a 100 millimeter of mercury rise has been noted. So why are we taking blood pressure medications when we might not need to at all? Sodium and chloride, that's your salt, that's two minerals here. In man, there's a loss of chloride in the urine, and it changes the metabolism of both the sodium and chloride. And believe me, those two things are critical to keep in balance for everything from your heart rate right on through to how your cells work and how tired you are. Well, how about the blood-forming organs? In the area of blood clotting, many people are put on aspirin. The blood clots faster, resulting in a reduction in blood clotting time when a person is chilled or cold. So what do? Go to the doctor, and he says, well, you may be having a clot, or you maybe have this. And so what do? They either put you on aspirin or Coumadin. When in reality, what we need to do is follow some basic physiological reasoning. How about the blood cells? The neutrophils increase in number in the peripheral blood, possibly because they cannot be mobilized into the tissue due to the loss of stickiness and chemotactic responses. Chemotactic responses have to do with can the white blood cell recognize where the bacteria is, go right through the vessel wall, and attack that infection when you cut your finger or stub your big toe or get infected or whatever. They lose that ability. The lymphocytes, one of your immune system, eosinophils, cells that are part of your immune system and antibody formation, are reduced. And the last thing here, there is an evolution of tissue. In other words, we're swapping things here. A loss of the thymic or thymico-lymphatic system and a compensatory proliferation of phagocytes and other portions of the reticuloendothelial system. Phagocyte is that large cell, phago meaning eat. It's one of the large cells that tend to eat and destroy your bacteria. But the reason that we're seeing this in the cold change is because the body is going into a fighting response when there's nothing to fight. How can the body have an allergy to cold? Well, some people actually do, but that's rare. You put an ice cube on them and they actually get a swelling. Looks like they got stung with a bee. But the point here I'm trying to get at here is that we are putting into high gear an immune system when there's no real enemy out there except for me. You ever wonder why you were your biggest enemy? Usually when I have some discussions with myself, most of the person I need to talk with is not someone else that's upsetting me. Usually I need to have a good talk with myself, and that's what we need to do after this kind of a lecture. We need to sit down and figure out if we're willing to follow the laws of health or not. How about allergies? Aren't they on the rise? I think they are. The physiological effect of cold on allergies? Histamine. Cold exposure liberates histamine, possibly due to tissue anoxia, lack of oxygen at the tissue level. What does histamine do? Well, let me ask you this. Why do you take an antihistamine? Because you want the histamine to stop. You know what the histamine is doing, it doesn't. You're wondering if this nose is going to stop running. And so you take an antihistamine, obviously, to knock out the histamine. So you know what histamine does. You walk out on a cold day and your nose starts running, what should that tell you? You're having a cold response. Allergy absorption, the stomach erosions, we're back to the stomach, and now allow compounds which do not usually get absorbed from the stomach to go directly into the bloodstream. In other words, you can have things, some of you may be familiar with a different lower in the intestine, we call it the leaky gut syndrome, where you're dealing with allergens or proteins that can get into the bloodstream that weren't supposed to get there in that state. They should have been broken down to get in pieces. But when they get through in their whole state, we have a problem. Also dealing with the absorption of things like adrenaline or histamine. And so we have an allergic response due to cold exposure. And how about one that plagues many, many, many older people? Arthritis. How much do you think has been spent on pain medication a day to deal with arthritis? I don't even have an estimate, so I can't even give you an idea. Joints, cold exposure, listen to this closely, causes a sudden discharge of fat from the synovial villi. Now, synovial fluid, that's your grease for your joints, in a capsule around your joints, with edema, okay, so you get swelling of this joint capsule, and you look at your knuckles and you wonder why it's swelling up, with petechial hemorrhages, that's a little tiny, looks like somebody took a pin and stuck you 1,000 times, it's very small, not a major hemorrhage. Sometimes an arthritis of nonspecific etiology may occur in, here we are, rats, chronically exposed to cold. The other thing we find out is that gout attacks. That's where you have a uric acid buildup in the joint. It doesn't mean that the cold causes the uric acid, but it means it can exacerbate it or bring it to a head. It's precipitated by chilling, infection, or foreign protein. So we can get gouty attacks, or we can have more stiff joints. Guess what? Guess what I told a man Wednesday? That's right. I practiced Wednesday morning and flew out here yesterday afternoon. I get myself back on track here. Walked to my office. He was telling me about his extremities. I said, "Do you wear socks to bed?" He said, "In the summertime." You know what I said, don't you? I said, "Yes, in the summertime." Because if his extremities are not kept warm, guess what's going to happen? Now he's putting more load on his heart. He's going to affect his arthritis. This one, I hope, startles you into realizing where the fashions come from. Satan invented the fashions which leave the limbs exposed, chilling back the life current from its original course. It didn't say God invented the fashions. God's responsibility was making us with large enough vessels to keep us warm. Man's responsibility is to understand the laws in the body and clothe ourselves properly. It is Satan's design. What he designs to. Now, when you say you design a car, does that mean you kind of think about building a car and just think about it? Designs, premeditates, works through, however you want to say this. Satan designs so to pervert every function of our being that life may be made miserable. How many of you are made miserable because you're not dressing properly? Don't raise your hands. I don't have to raise mine. Make life miserable and God may be dishonored in the creatures He has made. That's a solemn statement. It's a statement that should take us to our knees, possibly kneeling down in front of your wardrobe and make some decisions. That's a statement that lets us understand why we have so much objection to what I'm talking about here this morning. Let me share 2 minutes on a personal experience. I started understanding this a number of years ago, and it was in the middle of summertime. What a time to start putting on more levels. I said, this is something. I was requested to go and speak at Sholo, Arizona, at a camp meeting there. And some of you know where Sholo, Arizona is. About 2 weeks before, I decided that I really need to have equal circulation. So you're right. I put on a long sleeve shirt. And I flew in the Phoenix at 115 degrees. And I says, you're going to test this theory out, aren't you? You know what? It was hot. It's going to be hot at 115 regardless of what you're doing. We went out to Shiloh. It was 90 degrees, about 7,000 foot elevation. Humidity about 10%. North Carolina's about 80%, so that was a nice relief for me. You didn't have a little wind. I was totally comfortable. No problems at all. And I said, well, the Lord really blessed in that one. So I've tested this out for myself, and I am thoroughly convinced of what I'm telling you. From a physiological standpoint, from a health standpoint. Why hasn't this lecture been heard by you before? Perhaps no question has ever come up among us, that's you and me, which has caused such, this is saying it nicely, isn't it? Which has caused such development of character as has the dress reform. That's a nice way of saying it, isn't it? You're having a real rough time and somebody says, well, you're developing character. That's a nice way of saying you're having a terrible day, isn't it? But it may be the proper way of saying we're having experience. For Testimony 6:36. Good circulation purifies the blood and secures health. Let me read that again. Good circulation purifies the blood and secures health, while a poor circulation renders the blood impure and induces the congestion of the vital organs. If you want to be comfortable in the summer, dress your extremities. It'll pull the heat from your trunk. Your core temperature will go down and be regulated. I guarantee it. I hope that you are willing to study. I hope that you are willing to follow the laws of health, and God will reward us for it, and not with all those diseases like the Egyptians had. Let's kneel and ask the Lord to bless us. Father in heaven, I pray that we will be willing to follow the laws that you have put in our body. I pray that we will not consult fashion for our understanding, but consult this blessed marvel that you have made, our human body. And I pray that we'll be willing to follow where thou art leading so that we can be healthy not for our own selves, but for thy name's honor and glory. I know that it hurts you more than it even hurts us when we are sick or ill or diseased or even death. And I pray that we will not shorten our usefulness, and I pray that we will not dishonor thee. And I also pray that we will not be in agreement with Satan and work on his side when you need people to stand in earth's history. Please bless us. Please work in our hearts. And yes, Lord, please help us not to rebel. In Jesus' name, amen.